I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. It is an honor and a pleasure to have you all with us. And of course, as always, I have the privilege of hosting my wonderful sister and awesome expert, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, my full of energy friend.
Throughout these last few episodes, we've been talking about how to equip our girls with the mindset and skill set, basically, that they need in order to carry out their roles and responsibilities as adults.
So we were talking about the Quran attracts our attention to the topic of haya. I was actually reading a hadith from Lady Fatima, salamullah alayha, that she says, a woman is someone who does not see a non-mahram and a non-mahram does not see her.
That's the best thing for a woman.
That is the best thing for a woman. I was with a traditional practitioner one day, and she was saying that there are some physiological impacts, you know, coming with the eyes, you know, the energy that you send and the energy that you receive. I call it energy, but I don't know if I'm using the right term. But when you are with a non-mahram man, it affects the psychology of your body, your energy, the power of your eyes, your sexual
waves,
drive, yeah. Everything. It impacts it. Mm. The priority in all of us Muslim women's lives is that if it's possible for us to have this interaction with the non-mahram to the limited possible level, right? Mm. And if it's possible to have it no interactions with the non-mahram. But then, of course, the concept of hijab is there that if you do have to go to the society, if you do have to interact to the minimum and, you know, cover your beauties and whatever that lies there. But these are all fruits of the upbringing of instilling haya in a person, right? It starts from a much younger age, before the time of conception, right? It starts with the food that the parents have eaten, if it is from halal money or not. So
absolutely.
Haya, the concept of modesty or chastity, starts from back then.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the way through the time that the mother is pregnant with her fetus, and how she thinks, how she feels, what she eats, where she goes, what she listens to, who she socializes with. All this have an impact on all the dimensions of that child, and including the modesty, the level of the modesty, right? No wonder they say that a person is shaqi in the womb of its mother, and a person is sa'id or prosperous in the womb of its mother, right? So everything, like the core of everything is there. So shaqi means
wretched.
Against opposite of sa'id, which is prosperous and happy and content.
Felicitous, yeah.
Right. The third level, when the child is born, they say that an adult couple who are having an intimate relationship together, even the sound of it should not be heard by a newborn child, as it affects the level of his or her chastity, right? So you see, Islam has very detailed guidelines about instilling haya in a person.
Sure.
Later on, when that child grows up, there is this beautiful verse in the Noble Quran that it says that you, as the parents, both of you, are responsible in telling your child what are your red boundaries. There are certain areas that are private to you, mom and dad, and your child will have to learn. And we're talking about 1,400 years ago.
Mm.
It's not right now that there's this private realm of life, right? It is in chapter Nur, verse number 58, where it says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم يا أيها الذين آمنوا. O you who have faith. Two categories of people, your slaves, the people who work for you in your home, and any of you who have not reached puberty, so your children, will have to seek your permission 3 times in a day.
Now, by that, the verse doesn't mean that once they reach puberty, they don't have to ask permission anymore.
No. It says that these people will have to, the verse is going to answer your mm-hmm. question. It says before the dawn prayer, mm-hmm. when you put off your garments at noon, mm-hmm. after the night prayer. I'm assuming that after the night prayer, after the Isha prayer, people in the past used to recline and go to bed, mm-hmm. right? In the middle of the night, they would wake up for nightly vigils mm-hmm. and then they would go to sleep again and have their private moments until it was the time of dawn. So after the Isha, you had to ask permission. Mm-hmm. And then before the dawn, you also have to, this is the period that parents are in the bedroom and they want to have their privacy. Mm-hmm. And you have to teach your child that when you want to enter, knock at the door.
You're listening to Muslim Lady and we're discussing the practical steps of instilling haya and modesty per the teachings of Islam. However, we're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Muslim Lady, and we are talking about some interesting stuff on today's episode of the show. Thank you for joining us.
Aside from the 2 times that the children will have to knock at the door and ask permission from the parents because they are they have taken off their clothes, they're comfortable in their bedroom, and it's a sign of showing respect to parents and their privacy. And then these are 3 times of privacy for you. Apart from these, it is not sinful of you or them to frequent one another freely without asking permission to enter. But the question that if you have reached maturity, you would have to ask permission every time during mm-hmm. the day where you want to enter your parents' room. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't reached maturity, these 3 specific moments, you have to ask permission. This is the 4th stage where you are raising your child and you are teaching him or her how to dress. Another stage where you have to teach your daughter about the concept of haya is that according to our hadith, hugging and kissing a girl has to be done with care and precaution, right?
Of course.
It's not like the girl is 14 and you're like, oh, this is my uncle. It's okay. He can see me without hijab. He has seen me growing up from a very young age.
Not her. Actual uncle.
No.
Because her actual uncle is paying.
Yeah. I think it was in the presence of one of the imams. I think it was 5th or 6th imam where a fellow man hugged a 5 or 6 year old girl. And the imam told him that, it's now that she's growing up, you're not allowed to kiss her and put her on your lap which you used to do. Mm. These are instilling chastity and modesty into the girls. Also, the other point that is very important, because children learn through the lens of their parents,
for sure.
Through their lens of what they see their parents do. So what the woman wears inside, what the Muslim lady wears inside the house is of utmost importance, that she doesn't wear revealing clothes in front of her little ones. Right? You shouldn't go into extremes. Islam is a religion of balance and moderation. So on the one hand, you see women wearing tops and shorts and revealing clothes in front of their 7, 8 year old sons, especially if you have a son inside your house, or some other women who go to the other end of this extreme and they cover themselves up so bad. They are reflecting a very negative image of Islam. Mm.
Their daughters, a very negative image of being woman.
Exactly. And these women, their daughters grow up to be exactly opposite of them. Mm. They say, if this is Islam,
they're resentful, yeah.
Exactly. I've seen it in my life among the people some of the people that I socialize with. The mom is the exact opposite of all the daughters.
Yeah. See, this is exactly what we were talking about, where it's a cultural thing, but it's not an Islamic thing. it's a culture practiced by Muslims, but it's not an Islamic culture. Nowhere in Islam tells you to cover yourself up the same in front of a mahram the same way you would in front of a non-mahram.
Exactly.
And I think those people also are unaware. Those people also need to be educated and need to be taught.
It's an offense to their relatives who see them always covered up. It's a cultural issue of even in Iran, some parts of there are some specific cultures who are like this.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the roots of that culture is, but even like there are so many little small segments of cultures in every city. Like even in one city, there are like hundreds of different cultures, right?
True.
So you always have to keep in mind the point of moderation and balance.
Yeah.
Not to go. And these are very important, as I said, for the upbringing of your little girls.
Yeah.
So this is another point that I wanted to mention.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email that is englishradio@irib.ir.
There's so much more to talk about modesty and haya. And we were talking about the verses of the Quran that highlight the concept of haya. And I'm going to mention one more verse from the Noble Quran where it gives you the guideline of what if you're a Muslim mother or father and you want to know what Islam expects of you as a Muslim woman and expects of you, your daughters, this is the guideline of, right. To be of a good woman.
Mm.
What is the criterion of being a good woman? We have talked about this verse so many times, but every time you can discuss it from a new dimension. The point is that from which direction are you looking at this verse this time? So it's verse 34 of Nisa.
Yep.
Your favorite verse. الرجال قوامون على النساء بما فضل بعضهم على بعض وبما أنفقوا من أموالهم فالصالحات قانتات حافظات. So the righteous women are obedient and they are hafidhat, they are guardians. Guardians of what?
Their chastity,
one
their
of
honor.
Them is their own chastity, their own honor, and the honor and the wealth of their husbands. So here again, the Quran exactly sheds light on the fact that if you're a woman, you are supposed to be a hafidh, right?
And that's all the time we have for today's episode.
Right.
Thank you to Sister Razia for this interesting discourse. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the Messiah.
messenger to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.